covered. I am Ander Elicidal. Eventine is my father. He extended his hand in greeting. Stee Jans's grip was iron-hard, the brown hands calloused and knotted. Ander broke the handshake quickly and glanced down the long lines of gray riders, searching in vain for other units of the Legion. The king has asked me to extend his compliments and to see that you are quartered. How soon can we expect the other commands? A faint smile crossed the big man's scarred visage. There are no other commands, my lord. Only the soldiers of the Free Corps. Only the... Ander hesitated in confusion. How many of you are there, Commander? 600. 600? Ander failed to hide his dismay. But what of the Border Legion? How soon will it be sent? Stee Jans paused. My lord, I believe that I should be direct with you. The Legion may not be sent at all. The Council of the Cities has not yet made a decision. Like most councils, it finds it easier to talk about making a decision than to make it. Your ambassador spoke well, I am told, but there are many voices of caution on the council, some of opposition. The king defers to the council. The council looks south. The Federation is a threat that the council can see. Your demons are little more than a Westland myth. A myth? Ander was appalled. You are fortunate to have even the Free Corps, the big man continued calmly. You would not have that if it were not for the Council's need to soothe its collective conscience. A token force, at least, must be sent to the aid of their elven allies, they argued. The Free Corps was the logical choice, just as it always is whenever there is an obvious sacrifice to be made. It was a simple statement of fact, made without rancor or bitterness. The big man's eyes stayed flat and expressionless. Ander flushed. I would not have thought that the men of Callahorn would be so stupid, he snapped, a sense of anger rushing through him. Stee Jans studied him a moment as if measuring him. I understand that when Callahorn was under attack from the armies of the Warlock Lord, the Borderlands sent a request to the elves for assistance. But Eventine was made prisoner by the Dark Lord, and in his absence the High Council of the Elves found itself unable to act. He paused. It is much the same with Callahorn now. The Borderlands have no leader. They have had no leader since Balinor. Ander eyed the other critically, his anger subsiding. You are an outspoken man, Commander. I am an honest man, my lord. It helps me to see things more clearly. What you have told me might not sit so well with some in Callahorn. The borderman shrugged. Perhaps that is why I am here. Ander smiled slowly. He liked Stee Jans, even without knowing any more about him than he did at this moment. Commander, I did not mean to seem angry. It has nothing to do with you. Please understand that. And the Free Corps is most welcome. Now let me see to your quarters. Stee Jans shook his head. No quarters are necessary. I sleep with my soldiers. My lord, the Elven army marches in the morning, I am told. Ander nodded. Then the Free Corps will march as well. We need only rest the night. Please tell this to the king. I will tell him, Ander promised. The Legion commander saluted, then turned and walked back to his horse. Remounting, he nodded briefly to the riders of the Elven patrol who escorted his command, and the long gray columns swung left once more down the muddied road. Ander stared after him with mingled admiration and disbelief. 600 men. Thinking of the thousands of demons that would come against them, he found himself wondering what possible difference 600 Southlanders would make. Chapter 28. At dawn, the elves marched forth from Arbalon to the wail of pipes and the roll of drums, voices raised in song, banners flying in splashes of vivid color against a sky still leaden and clouded. Eventine Elicidal rode at their head, gray hair flowing down chainmail forged of blue iron, his right hand holding firmly the silver-white staff of the Elcris. Alanon was at his side, a spectral shadow, tall and black atop a still taller and blacker Artak, and it was as if death had ridden from the pits of the earth to stand watch over the elves. Behind rode the king's sons, Arion, cloaked in white and bearing the elven standard of battle, a war eagle on a field of crimson. Ander, cloaked in green and carrying the banner of the House of the Elicidals, a crown wreathed in boughs set over a spreading oak. Dardan, Roe, and 36 hardened elven hunters came next, the Elicidal Guard. Then the gray and crimson of the Legion Free Corps, 600 strong. Pindannon rode alone at the forefront of his command, a gaunt, bent figure atop his warhorse, his battle-scarred armor lashed about his spare frame as if to hold his bones in place. The army followed him, massive and forbidding, 6 columns wide and 1,000 strong. They numbered 3 companies of cavalry, battle lances hoisted out of their midst in a forest of iron-tipped shafts, 4 companies of foot soldiers with pikes and bloody shields, and 2 companies of archers bearing the great elven longbows. All clad in the traditional manner of the elven warrior, lightly armored with chainmail vests and leather guards to assure mobility and quickness. It was an awesome procession. Trappings and weapons creaked and jingled in the early morning stillness, flashed in dull glimmerings through the new light, and cast the elves in half-human forms that whispered of death. Booted feet and iron-shod hooves thudded and splashed along the muddied earth as the columns of men and horses wound from the parade grounds north of the city to the bluff of the Carolan and prepared to turn onto the Elfich, the hooked rampway that led down from the heights of Orbalon to the forest lands beneath. The people of the city had come to watch. Atop the Carolan, on walls and fences, in fields and gardens, lining the way at every step, they bade farewell with cheers of encouragement and hope, and with silences born of emotions that had no voice. Before the gates to the gardens of life, the Black Watch stood assembled, present to a man, their lances raised in salute. At the bluff's edge were gathered in review the elven hunters of the home guard, and the man who would command them in their king's absence, Aemir Chios, first minister of the High Council, now the designated defender of the city of Arbalon. Down out of the Carolan the elven army wound, following the spiral of the stone block ramp as it dropped along the forested cliffs through 7 walled gates that marked its levels of descent. At its lower end the army swung south toward the narrows. A solitary bridge spanned the Rill Song, the lone passage west from the city, its iron struts nearly awash with the swollen waters of the river. Like a metal-backed snake, the army moved onto the bridge, crossed, and passed into the silent woods beyond. The glitter of weapons and armor twinkled into darkness, banners slipped from view, and the strains of song, the wail of pipes and the roll of drums faded into echoes, quickly lost in the leafy canopy of the trees. By the time the morning sun had broken through the clouds of the departing storm to rise above the crest of the Carolan and light the forest land below, the last remnants of this grand procession had disappeared from view. For 5 days the army journeyed west from Arbalon, winding its way through the deep forests of the homeland toward the Serendanon. The rains had moved east into Calahorn, and the sun shone down out of the cloudless blue skies to warm the woodland shadows. Travel was measured, the cavalry forced to slow its pace to match that of the soldiers afoot. Evidence of the danger threatening the elves became steadily more apparent as the army passed westward through the outlying provinces. Tales filtered back from elven families on their way eastward to the home city with their possessions bundled in carts and on the backs of oxen and horse. Their homes and their villages were abandoned behind them. Terrifying creatures roamed the land west, their frightened voices warned. Dark and brutal monsters that killed without reason and disappeared as quickly as they had come. Cottages had been stripped and homes violated, the elves within left torn and broken. Such incidents were scattered, but that merely served to convince the fleeing villagers that there was no longer any place west of Arbalon that was safe. As the army marched past, the villagers sent up cheers and shouts of encouragement, but their faces remained clouded with doubt. The march west wore on until late in the afternoon of the fifth day. The army passed out of the forest land into the valley of the Serendanon. The valley lay sandwiched between woodlands on the south and east, the Kensro Mountains on the north, and the broad expanse of the Innisbor on the west. A flat, fertile stretch of farmland dotted with small clumps of trees and pockets of spring water, the Serendanon was the breadbasket of the elven nation. Corn, wheat, and other seed crops were sown and harvested seasonally by the families who lived within the valley, then bartered or sold to the remainder of the homeland. Mild temperatures and a balanced rainfall provided an ideal climate for farming, and for generations the Serendanon had served as the principal source of food for the elven people. The elven army encamped that night at the eastern end of the valley. At dawn on the following day it began the journey across. A broad earthen road wound through the heart of the Serendanon past fence lines and clusters of small dwellings and sheds, and the army followed it west. In the fields, the families of the valley toiled with quiet determination. Few elves here had yet gone east. Everything that had meaning in their lives lay rooted in the land they farmed, and they would not be frightened off easily. By mid-afternoon, the army had reached the western end of the valley. In the distance, beyond the Innisbor, the humped ridge of the brake line rose up against the horizon, curving north above the Kensro into the wilderness of the Kershalt territory. The sun already lay atop the crest of the mountains, brilliant golden light spilling down out of the rock. In the growing darkness of the eastern sky, the moon's whiteness glimmered faintly. The army swung north. Between the Innisbor and the Kensro, Bayan Draw opened down out of the rugged hill country below the brake line into the valley of the Serendanon. It was there that the army of the elves made its camp. At dusk, Alanon came down out of the Kensro as silently and unexpectedly as he had gone into them hours before, his tall form moving into the elven camp like one of night's shadows. Dark and solitary as he passed through the maze of cooking fires that dotted the grasslands. He went directly to the tent of the elven king, oblivious to the soldiers who stared after him, his head lowered within the darkness of his cowl. The elven hunters who stood watch before Eventine's quarters stepped aside wordlessly at his approach and let him enter without challenge. Within, he found the king at a small makeshift table of planks laid crosswise atop logs, his evening meal spread out before him. Dardan and Roe stood silently at the rear of the tent. At a glance from the druid, Eventine dismissed them. When they were gone, Alanon moved to the table and seated himself. "Is all in readiness?" he asked quietly. Eventine nodded. "And the plan of defense?" In the light of the oil lamps, the king could see that the druid's dark face was streaked with sweat. He stared uncertainly at the mystic, then pushed aside his dinner and laid a map of the elven homeland upon the table. "At dawn, we march to the brake line." He traced the route with his finger. "We will secure the passes of Hallis Cut and Whirl Run, and hold them against the demons for as long as we are able. If the passes are forced, we will fall back to the Serendanon. Bayan Draw will be our second line of defense. Once through the brake line, the demons will have three ways to go. If they turn south out of the passes, they must circle below the Innisbor through the forests, then come north again. If they turn north first, they must make their way through the rugged hill country above the Kensro and come south. Either route will delay their advance on Arbalon by at least several days. Their only other choice will be to come through the draw, and through the elven army. Al-Anon's dark gaze fixed on the king. They will choose the draw. We should be able to hold it for several days, the king continued. Longer, perhaps, if they do not think to flank us. 2 days. No more. The druid's voice was flat, unemotional. Eventine stiffened. Very well. 2 days. But if the draw is taken, the Serendanon will be lost. Arbalon will be our last defense. So be it. Al-Anon leaned forward, hands knotting together before him. We need to speak now of something else, something that I have kept from you. His voice was soft, almost a whisper. The demons are no longer with us. Those who have crossed already through the forbidding, the Dagda'Mor and his followers. They neither watch us nor follow after us. If they did, I would sense it, and I have sensed nothing from the time that we left Arbalon. The elven king stared back at him wordlessly. I thought it strange that they should take so little interest in us. The druid smiled faintly. This afternoon I went up into the mountains so that I might be alone to discover where it was that they had gone. It is within my power to search out those who are hidden from my eyes. I have that power, but it must be used sparingly, for in using it I reveal to others with powers similar to my own, such as the Dagda'Mor, both my presence and the presence of any whom I seek. I could not risk using it to follow Will Ohmsford and your granddaughter on their journey south. If I did, I might tell the demons where they could be found. Yet to search out the Dagda'Mor himself, that, I felt, was a risk that should be taken. I did seek him then, searching the whole of the surrounding land to discover where he had concealed himself. But he was not concealed. I found him beyond the wall of the Brake Line, within the Hoar Flats, he and those who follow him. Still, I could tell little of what they were about. Their thoughts were closed to me. I could but sense their presence. The evil that pervades them is so strong that even brushing against it momentarily caused me great pain, and I was forced to withdraw at once. The druid straightened. It is certain that the demons gather within the flats in anticipation of the collapse of the forbidding. It is certain that they work to hasten that collapse. They do this openly and without concern for what the plans of the elves may be. That suggests to me that they already know those plans. Eventine paled. The spy within my house. The spy who warned the demons that you would be at Perrinor. That would explain why it is the demons show such an obvious lack of interest in our movements, Al-Anon agreed. If they already know that we intend to stop them at the Brake Line, they have little need to follow after us to see what we are about. They have only to await our coming. The implication of that statement was not lost on Eventine. Then the Brake Line may be a trap. The druid nodded. The question is, what kind of trap do the demons set? There are not enough of them yet to withstand an army of this size. They have need of those still imprisoned within the forbidding. If we are quick enough. He left the sentence unfinished and rose. One thing more, Eventine. Be cautious. The spy is still with us. He may be within this camp, among those who trust. If the opportunity presents itself, he may seek your death. He turned and moved back toward the entry, the shadow of his dark form rising up against the tent wall like some giant in the flickering light of the oil lamps. The king stared after him wordlessly for a moment, then lurched sharply to his feet. Al-Anon. The druid looked back. If the demons know why we marched to the Brake Line, if they know that, then they may also know that Amberley carries the Elkris seed into the Wilderun. There was an unpleasant silence. The two men faced each other. Then, without replying, the druid turned and disappeared through the tent flap into the night. At that same moment, Ander was picking his way through the crowded elven encampment in search of the Legion Free Corps and Stee Jans. Ostensibly, his mission was to inquire into the needs of the Legion soldiers, but underlying this was his personal interest in their commander. He had not spoken again with Jans since the Free Corps had arrived in Arbalon, and he was admittedly curious to know more about the enigmatic Southlander. With nothing else immediate to occupy his time, he had decided to take this opportunity to seek him out and talk further with him. He found the Free Corps camp at the southern edge of the Kensrow, their watch already posted, their horses tethered and fed. No one challenged him as he wandered into their midst. When he could not immediately locate the Free Corps commander's quarters, he stopped a number of soldiers to ask if they knew where Jans could be found, and was directed finally to a Legion captain. Him! The captain was a burly fellow with a heavy beard and a laugh that rang deep and hollow. Who knows? He's not in his tent, I can tell you that much. He left almost as soon as we pitched camp. Went out into the hills. Scouting? Ander was incredulous. The captain shrugged. He's like that. Wants to know everything about a place where he might die. He laughed roughly. Never leaves that kind of checking to another. Likes to do it himself. Ander nodded uncomfortably. I suppose that's why he's still alive. Still alive? Why, that one will never die. You know what they call him? The Iron Man. Iron Man, that's him. That's the commander. He looks hard enough, Ander agreed, his curiosity piqued. The captain motioned him closer, and for a moment each forgot whom he was addressing. You know about Rybeck? The border man asked. Ander shook his head, and a glint of satisfaction leaped into the other's hard eyes. You listen, then. 10 years ago, a band of gnome raiders was burning and killing the people at the eastern edge of the borderlands. Vicious little rats, and a bunch of them at that. The Legion tried everything to trap them, but nothing worked. Finally, the king sent the Free Corps after them, with orders to track them down and destroy them, even if it took the rest of the year. I remember that, Hunt. I was with the Corps even then. He squatted down next to a cooking fire, and Ander hunched down beside him. Others began drifting in to listen. 5 weeks the hunt went on, and the Corps tracked those gnomes all the way east into the Upper Anar. Then one day, when we were getting close, a patrol of our men, only 23 of them, stumbled into a rear guard of several hundred raiders. The patrol could have fallen back, but it didn't. These were Free Corps soldiers, and they chose to fight. One man was sent back for reinforcements, and the rest made their stand in this little village called Rybeck. Just a bunch of nothing buildings. For 3 hours, those 22 soldiers held out against the raiders, threw back every assault they mounted. A lieutenant, 3 junior officers, and 18 soldiers. One of those junior officers was just a kid. Just 7 months with the Corps, but already a corporal. No one knew much about him. Like most, he didn't say much about his past. The captain leaned forward. After the first 2 hours, that boy was the only officer still alive. He rallied the half dozen soldiers left into a small stone cottage. Refused surrender, refused quarter. When the relief force broke through finally, there were dead gnomes all over the place. The man's hand tightened into a fist before Ander's face. More than 100 of them. All of our men were gone, all but 2, and one of them died later that day. That left just 1. The boy corporal. He paused and chuckled softly. That man was Stee Jans. That's why they call him the Iron Man. And Rybeck? He shook his head solemnly. Rybeck shows how a soldier of the Free Corps should fight and die. The soldiers gathered about him murmured their assent. Ander paused a moment, then rose. The captain stood up with him, straightening himself as he seemed to remember again who it was that he was conversing with. Anyway, my lord, the commander's not here right now. He paused. Can I do something for you? Ander shook his head. I came to ask if there was anything you need. A bit to drink, someone cried, but the captain waved him off with a quick oath. We'll be fine, my lord, he responded. We have what we need. Ander nodded slowly. Hard men, these Free Corps soldiers. They had made the long journey to Arbalon, and then, with but a single night's rest, a forced march to the Serendanon. He doubted that there really was much that they needed. Then I'll say good night, Captain, he said. He turned and walked back toward the elven camp, mulling over in his mind the tale of the legion commander they called the Iron Man. Chapter 29 The following morning the army of the elves and their legion allies marched north out of the Serendanon. With the dawn still a faint silver glow above the eastern forest line, the soldiers wound through Bayendraw and turned into the hills that lay beyond. Armor and harness jangled and creaked, boots and hooves thudded in rough cadence, and men and horses huffed clouds of white vapor in the frosty morning air. No one spoke, or whistled, or sang. A sense of anticipation and wariness pervaded the ranks. On this morning, elven hunter and borderman knew they were marching into battle. Up into the hills they circled, hills barren and rugged, their slopes sparse with short grass and scrub, rutted and eroded by wind and rain. Ahead, still far distant, the dark mass of the break line stood silhouetted against the dying night. Slowly, as the sun brightened the skyline, the mountains etched themselves out of the blackness, a maze of peaks and crags, drops and slides. The day began to warm. The morning hours slipped away and the army swung west, columns of riders and men afoot winding through gullies and over ridges, stretching out across the land. To the south the waters of the Innisbor sparkled in flashes of blue, and above the choppy surface flew a sprinkling of white-backed gulls, their wings tipped with black, their cries shrill and haunting. By noon the army had reached the break line, and Eventine signaled a halt. The mountains loomed up against the horizon, a dark and massive wall of rock. Cliffs and spires rose thousands of feet into the sky, massed close as if some giant had gathered them within his hands and squeezed until the stone had broken and split from the pressure. Still and silent, barren and cold, they were filled with emptiness, darkness, and death. Two passes split the break line, slender threads that tied the land of the elves to the Hoar Flats. South lay Halas Cut, north lay Worrell Run. If the demons were to break through the forbidding within the flats as Alanon had foreseen, then, to reach the city of Arbalon, they would be forced to come east through one or both of these passes. It was there that the elven army would try to stop them. "We part company here," Eventine announced when he had assembled his officers. Ander edged his mount closer to the small circle of men to hear clearly what was being said. "The army will divide. Half will march north with Prince Arion and Commander Pendannon to secure Worrell Run. The other half will march south with me to Halas Cut. Commander Jans." The bronzed face of the Free Corps commander pushed into view. "I would like the Free Corps to march south. Pendannon, give the order." The ring of horsemen broke apart as the word was passed down the line. Ander glanced briefly at Arion, who met his gaze coldly and turned away. "Ander, I want you to ride with me," his father called over to him. Kael Pendannon came galloping back to the king. All was in readiness. The two old comrades bade farewell to each other, hands clasping tightly. Ander looked one time more for his brother, but Arion was already moving to the head of his column. Alanon appeared, dark face impassive. "His anger is misplaced," the druid said quietly, then nudged Artak past. Pindanin's voice rang out. Banners and lances lifted in salute as the army of the elves split apart. Shouts and cheers broke the morning stillness, echoing through the crags and rifts of the mountain rock. For long moments the air was filled with sound, reckless and fierce. Then Pindanin's command swept north, winding into the hills in a broad cloud of dust until it was lost from view. The soldiers of the king turned south. For several hours they worked their way along the fringe of the break line, following the steady rise and fall of the lowland hills. Overhead the sun passed west across the ridge of the mountains, and shadows began to lengthen in dark swatches. The still, sultry air of midday cooled in a southerly breeze that swept out of the distant forests. Gradually the hills broadened into grasslands. At their edge, straddled by a series of narrow, ragged peaks, the dark mouth of Hallis Cut opened into the rock. Eventine brought his arm to a halt and held a brief conference with his officers. Below the eastern entrance to the pass lay several miles of open plains that ran south to the forest line. If the demons were to find a way to cross the break line below Hallis Cut, they could slip north through the forest land and trap the elven army within the pass. A rear guard would be necessary to protect against that possibility. A cavalry unit could best handle the assignment. The cavalry would be of little use in any case within the narrow confines of the pass. Anders saw his father's gaze fall briefly on Stijan's, then move away. Elven cavalry units would form that guard, the king announced. The order was given. The elven cavalry detached itself from the main body of the army and began to deploy across the length of the grasslands. At a signal from Eventine, the remainder of the army turned into Hallis Cut. Through the broad, shadowed gap the elves marched, rugged cliffs towering up about them. The floor of the pass began to climb almost immediately, and the soldiers trudged upward into the rock. Quickly the air cooled, and the sound of shod hooves and booted feet striking against stone echoed eerily. As the trail continued to rise, the footing grew less sure. Loose rock littered the pathway, and cracks split its surface. Men and horses stumbled and slid with each step, and the pace slowed. Then abruptly, it stopped. Before them a huge chasm opened, a massive fissure that dropped away into black emptiness, splitting the length of the pass ahead for hundreds of yards. To the left, the trail sloped down along the mountainside, broad and even as it ran to a defile at the far end of the chasm. To the right, a narrow ledge skirted the fissure, a thin, crumbling pathway that would barely permit the passage of a single rider. All about, sheer cliff walls seemed to bend inward as they rose until all that remained of the sky was a thin, ragged blue line. The army swung left along the broader path, staying well back of the black mouth of the chasm. When it had gained the defile, it found itself entering a canyon bright with afternoon sunlight and grown green with scrub and sawgrass. Clusters of boulders dotted the canyon floor, and a thin stream trickled down out of the cliff walls and pooled in a small, brush-grown hollow. Jackrabbits bounded through the brush at the army's approach, and a scattering of birds drinking at the water's edge took sudden flight. The elves crossed to the far end of the canyon. There the pass opened down a broad, winding gorge into the vast emptiness of the Hoar Flats. Eventine's hand came up sharply, signaling a halt. His eyes swept the length of the gorge, past a maze of jumbled rock pockets and drops angling down through hulking cliffs and long, rugged slides. Wordlessly, he nodded. It was here that the army would make its stand. Dusk crept into the break line, shadowed gray light chasing toward a sunset that lit the sky above the Hoar Flats in a blaze of scarlet and gold. Behind the wall of the mountains, the moon's silver disk rose above the forest land, and one by one the stars winked into view. Within Hallis Cut, the silence began to deepen. Ander Elicidal stood alone on a small knoll midway down the gorge that ran to the flats, arms cradling protectively the silver-white staff of the Elcris. Wordlessly he surveyed the lines of elven hunters and Free Corps soldiers, reconstructing in his mind for the 20th time in the past half-hour the strategy his father had devised for the defense of the pass. A broad rise straddled the pass several hundred yards from its mouth, a flat shelf of rock that overlooked a rugged slide strewn thick with loose stone and scrub. It was here that the army would make its initial stand. Archers would line the front of the rise, shooting into the demons as they came out of the flats through the mouth of Hallis Cut to scramble up the slide. When the demons were too close for the longbows to be effective, the archers would be replaced by a phalanx of lancers and pikemen who would bear the brunt of the assault. A second phalanx would be held in reserve to reinforce the first. The defenders would hold the rise for as long as they were able, then fall back several hundred yards to a similar position. If the gorge were lost, they would fall back to the mouth of the canyon. If that too were lost, the canyon itself would be defended. And so on, until the army was forced entirely from Hallis Cut. It was a good plan. Ander was satisfied on thinking it through that the pass would not be easily taken. The defensive positions had been well chosen. When the attack came, it would find the elves ready. He lifted his gaze and stared out toward the flats. Nothing moved. The land lay silent and empty. There was still no sign of the demons. Yet they would come. His hands moved slowly over the smooth wood of the Elcris staff, tracing the grain of the skin. His father had left the staff in his care momentarily while he had descended the slide to make his own inspection of the elven defenses. Ander breathed the night air deeply. Would the staff truly protect the elves? Would it lend its magic to those who were mortal men now, no longer the creatures of faerie that their forefathers had been? He looked down at it, gripping it tightly within his hands, and tried to find his own strength in its firmness. Alanon had said that the power of the Elcris over the demons was carried within this staff, and that it would weaken the evil and make it vulnerable to elven weapons. Yet doubt clouded Ander's mind. The demons were an incomprehensible evil, born of a world long since gone, a world that none but they had ever seen nor could begin to imagine. He caught himself. None but Alanon, he corrected himself. And Alanon was himself perhaps a part of that dark, forgotten world. His father appeared suddenly from the darkness, slipping from the shadows to stand beside him. Wordlessly, Ander passed back the Elcris staff. Fatigue and worry lined the old man's face, reflected in his eyes, and Ander forced himself to look away. "Is everything all right?" he asked after a moment. The king nodded distantly. "All of the defensive positions are established." They were silent again. Ander tried to think of something more that he could say. There was an uneasiness in him that would not settle, one that gave rise to a need to be close to his father. He wanted Eventide to understand this. Yet it was difficult somehow to speak with his father of such things. Neither of them had ever been very good at expressing feelings to the other. His mood darkened. It was that way with Arion as well. Particularly with Arion. There was a distance between them that he had never really understood, a distance that might have been shortened had either of them been able to talk about it. But neither had tried. It was worse now, of course. Arion was angered by what had taken place at the High Council, by Ander's refusal to reject Amberlee as the rightful bearer of the Elcris seed, and by his refusal to demand of her, as Arion thought proper, an accounting of her actions. Now he would not talk with his brother at all. There was such bitterness in Arion. Still, it was bitterness that Ander understood. When Amberlee had left Arbalon those many months ago, abandoning without explanation her responsibilities as one of the Chosen, both brothers had experienced that bitterness. He as much as Arion, because he too had loved the child. For too long a time he had let the bitterness blind him to everything that she had once meant to him. Yet seeing her again had allowed him to rediscover something of his old feeling for her. He would have liked to explain that to Arion. He needed to explain it. But somehow he could not seem to find a way to do so. He started sharply as he realized that Alanon was standing beside him. The druid had materialized from nowhere without even the faintest whisper of those black, concealing robes. The cowled face studied him momentarily, then looked past him to his father. "You do not sleep." Eventine seemed distracted. "No, not yet. You must rest, Elven King. Soon. Alanon, do you think that Amberley is still alive?" Ander caught his breath and glanced fleetingly at the druid. Alanon was quiet a moment before answering. "She is alive." When he said nothing more, Eventine looked over. "How can you know that?"
"I cannot know. It is what I think."
"Then why is it that you think she is alive?"
The druid's head lifted slightly, deep-set eyes studying the sky.
"Because Will Ohmsford has not yet used the elfstones. If Amberley's life were threatened, the Veilmen would use the stones."
Ander frowned. "Elfstones? Will Ohmsford? What was all this about?" Then he remembered the second cloaked figure at the High Council, the one whom Alanon had brought into the chamber with Amberley, and who had never shown himself. That would be Will Ohmsford. He turned quickly to Alanon, questions forming on his lips, then caught himself and turned away again. Perhaps this was not something he should be asking about, he thought. After all, nothing had been said before. If Alanon had wanted him to know more, he would have told him. But then why had the druid said anything at all? Confused, he stared out across the flats as the sun slipped beneath the horizon, the colors of the sunset fading slowly into the night.
"There are watchfires laid across the mouth of the pass," his father murmured after a moment.
"I must order them lighted."
He walked down into the gorge, and Ander was left alone with Alanon. The two stood wordlessly, motionless statues in the growing dark, looking after the stooped figure of the old king as he wound his way down along the broken rock. The minutes slipped away. Ander thought himself forgotten when the druid's voice floated up suddenly out of the silence.
"Would you know something more of Will Ohmsford, Elven Prince?"
Ander stared at the big man in astonishment, then managed a startled nod.
"Then so you shall."
Alanon never even glanced at him.
"Listen."
Quietly he told Ander of Will Ohmsford, of his heritage and of his mission to the elves. Memories came back then to the elven prince of his father's stories of the Veilmen, Shay and Flick Ohmsford, and of their search for the legendary Sword of Shannara. And now Shay's grandson, heir to the power of a magic that no elf had wielded since the destruction of the old world, had been made Amberley's protector. When the druid finished, Ander was silent for a moment. He stared down into the shadows where his father had disappeared, thinking. Then he glanced once more at the druid.
"Why have you told me this, Alanon?"
"It is something you should know."
Ander shook his head slowly.
"No. I mean, why me?"
Then at last the druid turned to look at him, hawk face barely visible within the shadows of the cowl.
"For many reasons, Ander," he said softly and paused.
"Perhaps because when no one else would come forward to stand with Amberley that night in the High Council, you did. Perhaps because of that." His black eyes remained fixed on Ander for a moment, and then he turned away again. You should rest now. You should sleep.
Ander nodded, his mind elsewhere.
Had the druid really answered his question?
He glanced briefly at Alanon, then looked away again, puzzled. Moments later, when he glanced back once more, the druid was gone.
Chapter 30. Dawn broke, and a deep gray mist covered the whole of the Hoar Flats. Thick, still, and impenetrable, it lay stretched across the earth like a death shroud. Night drew away from the mist as the pale, silver light of sunrise crept down out of the break line. When the night had gone, the mist came awake. With a sluggish heave, it began to churn against the wall of the mountains like some foul soup stirred within its kettle. Faster and faster it swirled, surging up against the cliffs until it seemed the rock must be swallowed and lost. High within the shadowed closure of Halas Cut, flanked by his father and Alanon and ringed by the home guard, Ander Elicital stared downward. Below, the army of the elves prepared to defend against the demon hordes. Row upon row of archers, lancers, and pikemen bridged the gorge that opened onto the flats, their weapons held ready, their eyes riveted on the mist as it boiled before the mouth of the pass. Out of this mist must come the demons, yet nothing could be seen of them. As the minutes slipped by and still the attack did not come, the soldiers began to grow restless. Ander could sense their uneasiness, like his own, turning slowly to fear.
"Stand fast! Do not be frightened!"
Alanon's voice rang out suddenly, and all eyes turned toward the black-cloaked druid.
"It is but mist, though demon wrought. Courage now! The forbidding gives way! The demons are about to cross over."
Still the mist churned wildly at the entrance to the cut, as if shut away by some invisible barrier that would not let it advance further. Silence hung across the land, deep and pervasive. Ander's hands were trembling as he gripped the staff from which the banner of the House of the Elicitals hung limply, and he fought silently to still them. Then abruptly the cries began, distant and haunting, as if drifting out of the bowels of the earth. Within the mist, streaks of red fire lanced upward to the still, darkened morning sky, and the roiling haze seemed to heave. The cries grew louder, turning suddenly to screams that were shrill and savage, filled with madness. They rose steadily, building into a single, unending shriek that emptied out of the flats into the narrow defile of Halas Cut.
"It comes," Alanon whispered harshly.
The soldiers of the elven army dropped to their knees, the sound breaking over them like a wave. Arrows were notched quickly in bowstrings. Spears and pikes were braced against the earth. Across the mouth of the pass, the mist erupted in red fire that turned the whole of the sky and earth crimson with its reflection. The shrieks and screams rose to a deafening pitch, and suddenly the air itself seemed to explode in a thunderous clap that burst out of the wilderness to the wall of the break line and shook the rock to its core. Ander cried out in dismay, and the force of the thunder threw them all to the earth. Hurriedly, they scrambled back to their feet, eyes searching. The air had gone silent. The mist hung gray and still once more.
"Alanon," he questioned softly. "It is finished. The forbidding is broken," the druid breathed.
In the next instant, the screams welled up anew from out of the emptiness of the flats, a maddened roar of exultation, and the demon hordes, freed at last from their centuries-old prison, spilled through the mouth of Halas Cut. Down the length of the gorge they came, a wave of struggling dark bodies. The demons were of all shapes and sizes, bent and twisted by the blackness that had encased them. There were teeth and claws and razor-sharp spines, hair and scales and bristled fur. They slouched and crawled, burrowed and flew, leaped and slithered.
All were things of legend and nightmare. Every creature from the oldest tales of horror was there. Were-creatures, half-human, half-animal, fleet gray shadows that the eye could barely follow. Massive, shambling ogres with hideously distorted features. Gremlins that flitted about as if blown on the wind. Imps and goblins black with muck and slime. Serpent forms that hissed their venom and twisted in frenzy. Furies and demon wolves, ghouls and other things that ate of human flesh and drank of human blood. Harpies and bat things that blackened the sky as they lifted their unwieldy bodies from the mass of their brethren. Searching through the mist, they ripped and tore at one another in their eagerness to break free. Elven longbows hummed, and a rush of black arrows cut apart the foremost demons. The rest barely slowed, scrambling quickly over the bodies of those who had fallen. Elven archers shot again and yet again, and still the demons came at them, screaming their rage and frustration. Less than 50 yards separated the two forces, and now the archers fell back into either flank as the forward phalanx of lancers and pikemen moved to the crest of the rise, bracing their weapons in readiness. The demons surged forward, a mass of twisting bodies, as they bounded up the broken rock of the gorge to where the elves waited. With a muffled crunch, the tide broke against the wall of the phalanx, claws and teeth ripping. The front ranks of the elven line wavered slightly but held. Demons hung impaled on spears, their shrieks filling the narrow gorge. With a heave, the elven hunters threw them back onto their own, watching in horror as the shattered forms were swallowed up in the mass that came after. Again, the demons surged up against the elves, and this time several knots broke through, only to perish instantly as the rear phalanx moved quickly to plug the gaps in the forward lines. But now the elves were dying also, buried under the black mass of their attackers, dragged forcibly from their ranks and torn apart. And still the demons continued to pour out of the mist, thousands strong, spreading out across the floor of the gorge and up its walls. Arrows cut them down in steady numbers, but where one fell, three more appeared to take its place. The elven flanks were beginning to buckle under the rush of attackers, and the entire line was in danger of being overrun. Eventine gave the order to fall back. The elves disengaged hurriedly, retreating to their second line of defense, a broken shelf of rock lying just below the passage that led back into the canyon. Again the longbows sang out, and a hail of arrows flew into the surging mass below. Lancers and pikemen formed their ranks, bracing for the assault. It came almost at once, the wave of struggling dark forms clawing their way over scrub and stone to tear at the hedge of elven spears. Hundreds died in the rush, pierced through by arrow and lance, trampled beneath the feet of their brethren. Yet still they came, surging forth from the mist into the deep funnel of the gorge, against the lines of elven defenders. The elves threw them back, once, twice, a third time. Hallis cut filled with dark bodies, crushed and bleeding, screaming in pain and hatred. At the mouth of the canyon, Ander watched silently the ebb and flow of the battle. The elves were losing ground. As Alanon had promised, the Elcris staff weakened the demons who came at the elves so that they died under the thrust and cut of elven iron. Yet this was not going to be enough to stop the hordes pouring forth, not even with the gallantry of the soldiers, the defensive positions chosen, or all the careful planning. There were simply too many demons, and not enough of the elves. He glanced hurriedly at his father, but the king did not see him. Eventine's hands were fastened on the gnarled length of the Elcris staff, and the whole of his concentration was fixed on the struggle below. The entire elven defensive line was beginning to buckle dangerously. Using weapons stripped from elven dead, rocks and makeshift wooden clubs, teeth and claws and brute strength, The demons fought to breach the thinning ranks of lancers and pikemen that yet barred their passage forward. The Legion Free Corps, held in reserve until now, threw itself into the center of the elven line, battle cry ringing out. Still, the demons came on. "We cannot hold," Eventine muttered, and prepared to give the command to withdraw. "Stay close," Alanon whispered suddenly to Ander. At that same moment, the demons broke through the left flank and came streaming up the gorge toward the knot of men who stood before the canyon mouth. The home guard stepped in front of the king and Ander protectively, Darden and Roe a pace or two to either side. Short swords slipped from their leather scabbards, the metal glinting. Hurriedly, Ander jammed the illicital standard into the rocky earth and drew his own weapon. Sweat ran down his body beneath the chainmail armor, and his mouth went dry with fear. Now Elanon moved forward, black robes flying as his arms lifted. Blue fire shattered the half-light, bursting from the druid's fingers, and the ground about the attackers exploded. Smoke billowed out of the rock, then dispersed across a scattering of lifeless dark bodies. But not all had fallen. For an instant, the survivors hesitated. Behind them, the breach had closed again. There could be no turning back. Shrieking in fury, they came on, ripping into the home guard. The struggle was desperate. Demons fell dying under the swords of elven hunters, yet a handful broke through and hurled themselves at the king. A lean black goblin sprang at Ander, claws ripping for his throat. Frantically, the elven prince brought up the short sword, warding off the attack. Again the creature lunged at him, but one of the home guard came quickly between them, pinning the demon to the earth with a single thrust. Ander stumbled back in horror, watching the battle surge closer. The left flank had collapsed anew, and again Alanon stepped forward to meet the rush. Blue fire lanced into the attackers, and screams filled the air. A knot of demons had breached the right flank as well, and came charging down off the slope in a desperate effort to aid those of the brethren trapped behind the elven defensive line. Ander froze. There were not enough home guard to stop them all. Then shockingly, impossibly, Eventine went down, felled by a club thrown from the mass of attackers. The blow caught the old king on the temple, and he toppled instantly to the earth, the Elkris staff falling from his hand. A roar rose out of the throats of the demons, and they pressed forward with renewed fury. Half a dozen from the band that had come down off the slope closed about the fallen king to finish him. But Ander was already springing to his father's side, his own fear forgotten, his face contorted with fury. With a howl of rage, he charged into the foremost attackers, black goblins like the one that had nearly finished him moments earlier, and two lay dying before the others realized what had happened. As if gone mad, Ander tore into the rest, thrusting them back from the fallen king. For an instant, everything was in chaos. On the ridge, the elven line of defense had been forced backward almost to the mouth of the canyon. Demons surged forward in droves, hacking at the elves who barred their way, shrieking with glee at the sight of the fallen Eventine. Ander struggled to keep the demons from his father. In his fury, he tripped over one he had slain and went down. Instantly, they were on him. Claws ripped into him, tearing at his armor, and for one terrible moment he believed himself a dead man. But Darden and Roe fought their way to his side, scattered his attackers, and pulled him to safety. Dazed, he stumbled back to where his father lay and knelt down beside the old man, disbelief and shock flooding into his face. His hands groped to find a pulse. It was there, faint and slow. His father was still alive, but fallen, lost to the elves, lost to Ander. The king, the only one who could save them from what was happening. Then Alanon was beside him. Snatching from the earth the fallen Elkris staff, he brought Ander to his feet with a yank and thrust the talisman into his hands. "Grieve later, elven prince." He placed his dark face close to Ander's.
for now you must command. Quickly, withdraw the elves into the canyon.
Anders started to object, then stopped. What he saw in the druid's eyes convinced him that this was neither the time nor the place for argument. Wordlessly, he obeyed. He ordered his father carried from the fighting. Then, rallying the home guard about him at the canyon entrance, he sent runners to the center and both flanks of the elven defensive line and ordered them to pull back. With Alanon at his shoulder, he placed himself squarely at the head of the gorge where the elves and the bordermen might see him, and watched the battle sweep toward him. Back surged the lancers and pikemen of the elven phalanx and the gray soldiers of the Free Corps, clogging the canyon mouth. Stejans appeared, red hair flying, a huge broadsword in his hands. Then Alanon's arms rose high above his head, black robes spreading wide, and the blue fire spurted from his fingers. "Now," he commanded Ander, "back into the canyon." Ander lifted the Elkris staff and called out. The last of the elves and Free Corps disengaged from the struggle and sprinted back through the pass connecting gorge and canyon. Shrieks of rage broke from the demons who surged forward after them. Alanon stood alone at the head of the pass. In a rush, the demons came for him, scrambling up the gorge, a wave of black bodies. The druid seemed to gather himself, his lean form straightening against the shadow of the rock walls. Again his hands lifted and the blue fire burst forth. All across the canyon entrance it burned, rising up like a wall before the enraged demons, barring their passage. Howling and screaming, they backed away. Within the canyon, Alanon turned to Ander. "The fire will last only a few moments." The druid's face was drawn and streaked with sweat and dirt. "Then they will be on us again."
"Alanon, how can we stand against such odds?" Ander began hopelessly.
"We cannot. Not here. Not now."
The druid gripped his arm.
"The passes of the break line are lost. We must escape quickly."
Ander was already shouting orders. His command sent the army of the elves streaming back across the canyon floor. Cavalry reserves rode ahead with wounded that could sit a horse. Pikemen, lancers, and archers followed, carrying those who could not. The home guard bore the unconscious king. Alanon and Ander trailed. They had gone just beyond the brush-sheltered pool that lay at the canyon center when the flame barring the far entrance flared and went out. In mid-flight, the elves looked back. For an instant, the entrance lay open, but then the demons poured through, choking the narrow passage as they fought to gain the canyon beyond. Howling, they swept after the fleeing elves. They were too late. The main body of the army had already gained the defile that led into the split and had scrambled through. A rear guard of Free Corps under Stejans set their lines as Alanon, Ander, and the remnants of the home guard crossed the last 100 yards of canyon floor. At the mouth of the defile, they turned momentarily to watch the approach of the demon hordes. It was an awesome, frightening spectacle. Like a dark wave, the demons filled the canyon, spreading out across its grass-covered floor from wall to wall, their struggling black bodies heaving and tossing like rats, driven before the waters of some great flood. The earth grew dark with leaping, twisting, writhing forms, and the air above was dotted with those that flew. Druid and elf stared back in disbelief. It was as if their numbers were endless. Then abruptly the wave seemed to part where it broke from the gorge, and a monstrous, scaled form lurched into view. Dark green and brutish, it dwarfed its brethren as it reared upward within the canyon pass and shoved its way through, scattering those about it like twigs. The elves cried out in horror. It was a dragon, its serpentine body spine covered and slick with its own secretions. 6 ponderous, gnarled legs, clawed and tufted with dark hair, supported its sagging bulk. its head arched searchingly into the air, horned and crusted, a distorted lump out of which burned a single, lidless green eye. As the scent of elven blood touched its nostrils, its snout split wide to reveal rows of jagged teeth, and its tail thrashed frenziedly behind it, filling the air with shattered bodies. The demons gave way hurriedly, and the monster shambled forward, shaking the rock with the weight of its passing. At the far end of the canyon, Alanon watched the dragon's approach for an instant more before turning to Ander. "Move back beyond the split. Quickly now." Ander was pale. "But the dragon is too much for you." The druid's voice was cold. "Do as I tell you. Leave the dragon to me." Ander stepped back to give the command, and the army of the elves withdrew to the far end of the split. With Stijans beside him, Ander turned to watch. Alanon stood alone, staring down into the canyon. The dragon had passed through the center of the canyon and was lurching up the slope toward the defile. Already it had caught sight of the druid, that solitary black figure that did not run like the others, and it hungered to reach him so that it might crush out his life. Massive legs churned, tearing apart the rock and earth beneath. Behind and to either side, the demons followed, shrieking with anticipation, scrambling to stay clear of their monstrous brother. Alanon held his ground, black robes drawn close about him until the dragon was less than 100 yards from the defile. Then the robes flew wide and the lean arms lifted, hands extending toward the monster. Blue fire lanced from his fingers, striking the dragon's head and throat, and the smell of charred flesh filled the air. Yet the creature did not slow, but shrugged aside the attack as if it were little more than bothersome, its huge form surging forward. Again the fire struck, singeing forelegs and chest, leaving trailers of smoke that rose from the dragon's body. Its hiss of anger was sharp and cold. But it came on. Alanon slipped back into the defile, moving quickly to the far end. Again he turned. The dragon reared into view, pushing forward into the narrow passage. Alanon struck, the blue fire searing in sharp, sudden bursts. The dragon's hiss was venomous as it snapped the air before it, frustrated that it could not yet reach the taunting creature ahead. The walls of the defile hindered its movements as it blundered forward awkwardly. Behind it, the cries of the demon brethren urged it on. Slowly, Alanon backed away from the mouth of the defile toward the split. The passage was clogged with smoke and dust, and the brutish form of the dragon was obscured by the haze. Then suddenly, it surged into view, its snout gaping hungrily. With both hands locked before him, Alanon sent a bolt of fire into the monster's eye. When the fire struck, the creature's entire head was enveloped. This time the dragon cried out, a terrible howl that spoke of pain and rage. Its body rose high within the defile, slamming against the stone walls until the cliffs shuddered with the force of the blows. Boulders tumbled down about the monster as it heaved and thrashed with pain. A moment later, the south wall cracked wide, and the entire cliff face began to slide slowly into the defile. Sensing the danger it was in, the dragon lurched forward, desperate to get clear of the pass. Half blinded by the pain and dust, it broke from the defile as tons of rock crashed down behind it, burying the demons who tried to follow. Blue fire struck it instantly, but without effect. The dragon was ready this time, its lumpish head bobbing guardedly to avoid the fire. Before it crouched the dark figure of the druid. Hissing in fury, the monster shambled toward its enemy, massive jaws snapping. Alanon wheeled and darted back, moving not to the broader trail that lay right, but sprinting onto the narrow ledge that curved left above the split. Maddened beyond reason, heedless of what lay ahead, the dragon came after him. In a rush, it thundered onto the ledge, snout reaching for the human fleeing before it, massive legs driving it forward. But suddenly, the ledge was no longer there. Broken rock gave way beneath the weight of the monstrous creature. With a desperate effort, the dragon lunged toward the druid. Alanon sprang back as massive jaws swept barely a foot short of his head. Then with a final, terrible hiss, the dragon slipped away from the crumbling ledge into the black pit of the chasm, disappearing in an avalanche of earth and stone, screaming its hatred. Down into the emptiness it fell, and was gone. Ander Elicidal stood at the far end of the split and watched as Alanon made his way back along the remains of the ledge. After a moment, his gaze shifted. A quick glance at the defile showed it blocked by tons of rock. A slow, bitter smile creased his bloodied face. The demons would follow them no further through Hallis Cut. The elves had gained a brief respite, a chance to regroup so that they might make their stand elsewhere. He turned. Behind him, within the mouth of the pass, the soldiers of the elven army stared out of the shadows in silence, weariness and uncertainty clouding their faces. The elven prince could read what was reflected there. So many demons had come through the forbidding, so many more than any of them had believed possible. They had failed utterly to stop them here. How would they stop them at the Serendanon? Wordlessly, he looked away again. He did not have the answer. He wondered if anyone did. Chapter 31. It was a dispirited army that came down out of Hallis Cut, shamed by the defeat that had been inflicted upon it, and shocked by the number of its dead and wounded. For the dead, lost in the flight back through the pass, there could be no proper return of the body to the earth which had given it life. For the wounded, there could be no relief from the excruciating pain of injuries inflamed by the poison of demon claws and teeth. Their moans and cries lingered unbearably in the midday stillness. For the rest, those who marched south along the wall of the break line, there could be no comfort taken in what had passed that day, nor little in what most certainly lay ahead. As the noon sun beat down upon them, mouths went dry with thirst, and thoughts turned black with bitterness. Ander Elicidal led them, no leader in his own mind, little more than a victim of capricious circumstance, and his thoughts were dark. He wanted this to be ended, his father restored to consciousness, and his brother returned. He held in his hands the gnarled length of the Elcris staff and thought himself a fool. None of this was meant to be. Still, he knew he must play the role that had been forced upon him a while longer, at least until the army reached Baen Draw. Mercifully, it would be ended then. His gaze shifted to Alanon. The druid rode silently beside him, dark and enigmatic within his concealing robes, his thoughts locked carefully away from Ander. Only once during the march back had he spoken. "I understand now why they let us come this far," he had said, his voice rather quiet in its suddenness. "They wanted us within these mountains." "Wanted us?" Ander had questioned. "Wanted us, Elven Prince," Alanon had replied coldly. "With so many, they knew there was nothing we could do to stop them. They let us trap ourselves." A rider appeared on the horizon, a solitary horseman, his mount driven almost to exhaustion as it galloped wildly across the grasslands toward the approaching elves. Lifting the Elcris staff, Ander signaled a halt. With Alanon beside him, he rode forward to meet the horseman. Disheveled and dust-streaked, the rider jolted to a stop before them. Ander knew this man, a messenger in his brother's service. "Flynn," he spoke the elf's name in greeting. The messenger hesitated, then glanced quickly past him to the column of soldiers. "I am to report to the king," he began. "Give your message to the prince," Alanon snapped. "My lord," Flynn saluted, his face white. Suddenly there were tears in his eyes. "My lord," he began again, but his voice broke and he could not continue. Ander dismounted and beckoned Flynn down with him. Wordlessly, he put an arm about the distraught messenger and led him forward several paces to where they might speak alone. There he faced the elf squarely. "Slowly now. Give me your message." Flynn nodded, his face tightening.
"My lord, I am instructed to tell the king that Prince Arion has fallen. My lord, he is dead."
Ander shook his head slowly. "Dead?" It seemed as if someone else were speaking.
"How can he be dead? He can't be dead. We were attacked at dawn, my lord."
Flynn was crying openly.
"The demons. There were so many. They forced us from the pass. We were overrun. The battle standard fell. And when Prince Arion tried to recover it, the demons caught him."
Ander quickly put his hand up to check the elf's words. He did not want to hear the rest. It was a nightmare that could not be happening. His eyes flashed quickly to Alanon, and he found the druid's dark face turned toward his own. Alanon knew.
"Do we have my brother's body?"
Ander forced himself to ask the question.
"Yes, my lord."
"I want it brought to me." Flynn nodded silently.
"My lord, there is something more."
Ander turned back now, waiting.
"My lord, Worrell Run is lost, but Commander Pendannon believes that it can be retaken. He requests additional cavalry to make a sweep back across the grasslands that border the pass so that—"
"No!" Ander cut him short, his voice suddenly urgent. With an effort, he composed himself.
"No, Flynn. Tell Commander Pendannon that he is to withdraw at once. He is to return to the Serendanon."
The elf swallowed hard, glancing hurriedly at Alanon.
"Forgive me, my lord, but I was instructed to speak with the king on this. The commander will ask—"
Ander understood. "Tell the commander that my father has been wounded." Flynn paled further, and Ander took a deep breath.
"Tell Kael Pendannon that I command the army of the elves, and that he is to withdraw at once. Take a fresh horse, Flynn, and go quickly. Safe journey, messenger."
Flynn saluted and hurried off. Ander stood alone, staring out across the empty grasslands, a strange numbness stealing through him as he realized that there no longer remained any chance to bridge that gulf that had always separated Arion and him. Arion was lost to him forever. His back to Alanon, he let himself cry. Dusk slipped silently across the valley of the Serendanon, its shadow lengthening to Baen Draw and the army of the elves. Within his tent, Eventine Elicidal lay sleeping, unconscious still, his breathing shallow and uneven. Ander sat alone at his bedside, staring down at him wordlessly, wishing that he would come awake again. Until the king woke, it would be impossible to judge how serious his injury might be. He was an old man, and Ander was frightened for him. Impulsively, he reached for his father's hand and took it gently in his own. The hand was limp. The old man did not stir. Ander held the hand for a moment, then released it again and leaned back wearily. "Father," he whispered, almost to himself. He stood up and moved away from the bed, distracted. How could it have happened? His father fallen, grievously injured, his brother killed, himself become leader of the elves. How could it have happened? It was a madness that he could not bring himself to accept. Certainly the possibility had always been there that his father and his brother would be gone and that he alone of the Elicidals would be left to rule. But it had been an absurd possibility. No one had believed it would truly happen, least of all he. He was ill-prepared for this, he thought gloomily. What had he ever been to his father and his brother but a pair of hands to act in their behalf? It had been their destiny to rule the elven people, their wish, their expectation, never his. Yet now, he shook his head wearily. Now he must rule, at least for a time. And he must lead this army that his father had led before him. He must defend the Serendanon and find a way to stop the demon advance. Alice Cut had shown the elves how difficult this would be. They knew as well as he that if the rock slide brought about by the battle between Alanon and the dragon had not blocked Alice Cut, the demons might have caught and annihilated them all. His first task then was to give the elves reason to believe that this would not happen to them here at Baen Draw, despite the loss of both the king and his firstborn son. In short, he must give them hope. He sat down again next to his father. Kael Pindanon could help him. He was a veteran of many wars, an experienced soldier. But would he? He knew that Pindanon was angry with him because of his order to the commander to withdraw from the passes of the Breakline. Pindanon had not returned yet, remaining behind with a rearguard of elven cavalry to slow the demon advance on the Serendanon. But forewarning of his displeasure had already reached Anders' ears through comments voiced by a handful of his officers. When he rode in, he would confront Ander directly. Then things would really come to a head. Ander already knew he would ask that command of the army be given to him. Ander shook his head once more. It would be easy enough to do that, to turn command of the army over to Pindanon and let the old warrior assume responsibility for the defense of the elven homeland. Perhaps that was what he should do. Yet something inside of him resisted so simplistic a resolution to the dilemma. There was need for caution in shedding too quickly duties that were clearly his. "What would you do?" he asked softly of his father, knowing there would be no answer, yet needing one. The minutes slipped past and the dusk deepened. Finally Dardan appeared through the tent flap. "Commander Pindanon has returned," he announced. "He asks to speak with you." Ander nodded and wondered momentarily where Alanon had gone. He had seen nothing of the druid since their return. Still, this meeting with Pindanon was his problem. He started to his feet, then remembered the Elkris staff which lay on the floor next to his father's bed. Lifting it in both hands, he hesitated a moment, staring down at the old man beside him. "Rest well," he whispered finally, then turned and stepped from the room. In the adjoining chamber he found Pindanon waiting. Dust and blood covered the commander's armor, and his white-bearded face was flushed with anger as he advanced on the elven prince. "Why did you order me to withdraw, Ander?" he snapped. Ander held his ground. "Lower your voice, commander. The king lies within." There was a moment's silence as Pindanon glared at him. Then, more quietly, the elven commander asked, "How is he?" "He sleeps," Ander replied coldly. "Now what is your question?" Pindanon straightened. "Why was I ordered to withdraw? I could have retaken Whirl Run. We could have held the Breakline as your father intended that we should." "My father intended that the Breakline be held for as long as it was possible to do so," Ander responded, his eyes locked on Pindanon's. "With my father injured, my brother dead, and Alice Cut lost, it was no longer possible. We were driven from Alice Cut, just as you were driven from Whirl Run." Pindanon bristled, but Ander ignored him. "In order to retake Whirl Run, I would have had to make a forced march north with an army that had just been routed, knowing that they would immediately be thrown back into battle. If our combined forces were then defeated, they would face an exhausting march back to the Serendanon, with little chance to rest before undertaking a defense of this valley. Worst of all, any battle fought within the passes of the Breakline would be fought without the use of elven cavalry. If we are to withstand the demon advance, we will need the whole of our strength to do so. That, commander, is why you were ordered to withdraw." Pindanon shook his head slowly. "You are not a trained soldier, my lord prince.
You had no right to make a decision as crucial as this one without first consulting with the commander of the army. Had it not been for my loyalty to your father... Anders' head came up sharply. Don't finish that sentence, Commander. His gaze shifted momentarily as the outer tent flaps parted to admit Al-Anon and Stee Jans. Al-Anon's appearance was not unexpected, but Ander was somewhat surprised to find the Free Corps commander there as well. The borderman nodded courteously, but said nothing. Ander turned back to Pindanon. In any case, the matter is done. We had better concern ourselves with what lies ahead. How much time do we have before the demons reach us? A day. Possibly two, Pindanon offered abruptly. They must rest, regroup. Al-Anon's black eyes lifted. Dawn tomorrow. There was instant silence. Are you certain? Ander asked quietly. They are driven beyond the need for sleep. Dawn tomorrow. Pindanon spat upon the earthen floor. Then we must decide now how we will stop them once they are here, Ander declared, hands running lightly over the Elkris staff. Simple enough, Pindanon snapped impatiently. Defend Bay and Draw. Cordon it off. Stop them at the Narrows before they reach the valley. Ander took a deep breath. That was tried at Halley's Cut. It failed. The demons forced the elven phalanx by sheer strength of numbers. There is no reason to believe that it would be any different this time. There is every reason, Pindanon insisted. Our strength is not divided here as it was in the breakline. Nor will the demons be fresh and rested if they march straight from the flats. Cavalry may be used